Okay, let's get down to business here. This is going to be informative, fascinating, essential information for many of us who have been wondering what to do and what's it all about. I'm talking about those things in the sky above us, and I know many of you have written to me and say, gee, I just noticed that, or gosh, when I try to tell people about them, they, and the answers and the concluding remarks to those statements are always discouraging. It's frustrating. The website that I'm going to refer you all to now is essential. In my opinion, it is the best. It is peerless. It is entitled Aerosol Crimes and Cover-Up by Clifford E. Carnicom. That's C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M. The website is carnicom.com. That's C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M.com. You can go there by clicking on Clifford's name at rents.com. I think it was about 1994-95 when I began to see some strange things in the sky. Oh, an X here, a couple of grid pattern pieces there. I think they were gearing up then. It began in earnest pretty much, according to most people, 96, and many noticed it in 97. Many still haven't noticed it today. They look up and see these cruddy skies and wonder, gee, what happened to those beautiful blue skies, those azure blue skies I saw as a child with those beautiful puffy clouds scudding across. They're gone, folks. They're very rare anymore. Look up aerosol crimes and cover-up. Look the data in the eye. Look at what Clifford Carnicom has researched himself. He is literally a self-trained, self-educated scientist of the first magnitude in terms of our atmosphere and what's going on above us. Carnicom.com. And I again go back to all the years that Clifford has not only inspired and informed the masses, but me in particular. I hold him in a very special light in terms of being one of my heroes and one of the great warriors for truth and our rights as human beings on the planet to live healthy and fruitful and productive lives. Welcome back to the program, my friend.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you very much for the invitation to be back here. I know it's been a little while, and I really do appreciate all that you're doing and making the time and space available anytime that the need arises.
Well, we've done this for many years now, and I'm not sure how much progress we've made, but to look at your website and to look at the information on there, for anyone who doesn't know about the chemtrail aerosol spraying going on over their heads, please go to Clifford's website. Read it, share it, spread it around, but don't be surprised when you run up to that that vacant look or that mirthful smile of people who don't get it, and you try to tell them. It's difficult. We have a key story at rents.com now, which was a top featured story, of course, for at least a week when Clifford sent it in a while ago. Aerosol Asymmetry, Core Tracks. It's a paper. It's an extraordinary topic with lots of great pictures. You'll find it at rents.com right now, and it's in the headline news section. You'll find it there, number two story in headlines on the right-hand side of our homepage. All right, Clifford, let's get right into it.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much, and that is what prompted our meeting tonight. In the main, the amount of time that I have available for research at the level that was done is quite limited now. And I've actually always tried to hold somewhat of a standard, and that is, unless something significant that is new and we're learning more about what is happening, I usually won't post a paper. And it's fairly safe to say that the bulk of my research is in place for people to review. You have that body of six to seven years of research. I have over a year invested in making a documentary to try and summarize the subject for folks. So the opportunities for me, both with my time as well as resources, to make any kind of real significant headway, further headway, they are limited. And so one will certainly see that the number of papers I have written over the past year or so is rather limited. But there are two that have been written over the last couple months now, something like that. And that's the basis of our meeting tonight, because I consider both of these papers significant to warrant the attention that we're giving. And tonight we're going to spend a little chunk of time, I hope, on this paper that you referred to called Aerosol Asymmetry. And it's primarily a set of photographs that we'll be looking at. I realize that not everybody will have access to these photographs, so we'll have to try to describe them, I think, as we go along.
Sure.
And normally also, I actually would not post an article unless I had been able to repeat that set of observations several times.
Correct.
What happened in this case was that I actually, this observation was made by myself several years ago. When I was making that documentary, I had some footage that showed something quite unusual to me, and that, at that time I was calling those core lines, and that's a phrase that I have coined for this, the best that I can establish right now. Mm-hmm. Core lines or core tracks. And within the video footage I had, I saw these things. Now, video footage is quite low resolution, and I really had nothing else to back that up with other than internal, within the emissions of the aircraft, there was something distinct and separate that took place, and it did catch my attention. I pretty much let it go, and I register. That's a lot of times that's how I'll do it. I'll register the observation. But at that time, it wasn't, let's say, substantiated enough to make an article or paper out of it. This time, it is, I think. I've recently acquired a better camera, and the image quality is a big part of why this is now possible for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain quality of image that's required to capture what we're showing tonight. So, you know, a combination, hopefully many of the folks will be able to see the photographs, and I'll try to describe them as we go. Now, I'd like to begin this by actually, if people are able to get to this page that we're talking about, to go to the bottom of the page instead of the top. And I know that's maybe somewhat counter to what we wish to do, but I did make an addition or revision on this paper a couple days ago.
Okay.
And I wanted to put some control photographs up there so people would have a comparison. And it will actually be, let's say, quite standard what it is I'm showing, but I think it's important to clearly show photographically the reference point that we're speaking from.
Very good. And for all of you who are listening, let me direct you. Go to headlines@rents.com. The second story there is Clifford's article. We're talking about aerosol asymmetry. Open that page, scroll to the bottom of that page, and you'll see a segment of pictures, the last segment of pictures, entitled Control Photographs. Go ahead, Clifford.
Yes, and thank you, Jeff. And so there's a set of four photographs that we're taking here. Now, in the normal world that most of us knew as we were growing up, this is actually a perfectly typical situation. This is as life in ordinary physics in our atmosphere should be. This is as normal aircraft should be. And it's what most of us know is the case for normalcy. But the photographs are clear, and they make a point. And what one will see is a set of four photographs. The time span is important here. It's extremely important. The time span here is roughly on the order of 15 to 20 seconds for these four photographs. So basically, roughly every 5 seconds, we have a shot taking place.
Mm-hmm.
The camera will be held stationary after the aircraft passes, and each of us can observe and analyze what's happening there. And basically, it's physics as physics should be.
Right.
You have an aircraft that passes over. You have heated water vapor that is emitted into an extremely cold environment, commonly minus 40, minus 50 degrees centigrade. That water vapor will freeze. You will then see a subsequent evaporation, mixing, and distribution of that water vapor in a very, anticipated fashion. And you could certainly liken this to your breath on a very cold winter's day. What happens to your breath if you go outside on a very, very cold winter day? What happens to your breath? The same thing. It's coming from a heated body. The water can freeze or condense, and then it will subsequently mix, evaporate, and dissipate.
Years ago, you made the point that contrails will not form unless there's a certain humidity at altitude.
Well, yeah, actually, there's some confusing information that has developed on that. And,
okay, I don't mean to get you off track, so don't go there if you don't want to on this visit.
You know, it actually is an important distinction, because, and I think it is important to bring it up. Let's go ahead, and that is that contrails do not actually need high moisture. This is actually one of the problems that has emerged over time, is the mixing up of the conditions between contrail formation and cloud formation. I would contend that these are entirely different physical processes that require entirely different physical conditions to manifest.
Well, you have
clouds and contrails.
You have aviation. Aviation fuel is moisture, and it's being turned into a vapor state. Okay.
So contrails actually form extremely well in extremely dry, cold, clean air. Dry air is actually very favorable for contrail formation. Clouds, on the other hand, require two main things. They require an amount of moisture that you're speaking of, 70%, and I think this is what you're referring to. Clouds require a minimum of 70% humidity, and they require particles to coalesce the moisture around. So the physical conditions and manifestation is entirely different between contrails and clouds, and that is a very important thing to set straight from the beginning.
Very good. Okay, stand by as we visit with Clifford Carnicom. His website is available by clicking his name. Crucial website dealing with this chemtrail aerosol spraying crime that has been going on now for a good 10 years. We will be right back.
I hear there's rumors on the internets. First, let me make it very clear. Poor people aren't necessarily killers. Just because you happen to be not rich doesn't mean you're willing to kill. I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
All right. We're back. Let's get right back to our conversation. I hardly stand to listen to that creeping. Go ahead, Clifford.
Jeff, thank you very much. The environmental conditions between these two sets of photographs are not that different. We're going to see remarkably different effects even under fairly similar conditions. The upper atmosphere is generally relatively stable. I mean, the reason aircraft are flying up there is because they're getting above the weather. It's not that you're supposed to be making weather. You're getting above the weather at those altitudes. That's why you fly up there. The humidity levels in the upper troposphere are relatively low, and it gets increasingly dry the higher you go. After you get over the mid-elevations, where clouds form, roughly call it 10, 15, 20,000 feet, this type of thing, once you go above that, the moisture levels in the upper atmosphere will start to decrease and actually become pretty darn dry up there. That's why contrails can actually form very well up there.
Right.
In fact, there was a paper I had read on the Concorde when that thing was being evaluated for environmental impact.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And they were talking about the humidity level up there at 60,000 feet or wherever they're trying to get these aircraft to fly at extremely high altitudes. And they're talking about the humidity level up there being 5%. This is very much fitting. This is exactly in accord with everything that I have observed is diminishing humidity at those upper altitudes. So the environmental conditions are not that different in terms of what we're seeing in a relatively stable environment. But the photographs we're going to discuss tonight are dramatically different. And the reason that I have offered these photographs to the public is I believe that they represent the potential of a very strong line of evidence that the public will be able to use to basically make their case. I think any one of us should be encouraged to, let's say, attempt to repeat these observations that have been taken. I'm going to try and describe the conditions under which they were taken in more detail.
Mm-hmm.
And that this can be offered as a line of evidence, basically, to anyone. And personally, take, for example, the Attorney General of New Mexico here, at least formerly Patricia Madrid, who wrote rather a condescending response using a debunker from the New Mexico Skeptical and Inquirer Association. Never did address the evidence, even when called upon to do so at a personal level to her office with a visit. So you basically have another line of evidence that I believe is substantial that will deserve an explanation. You know, and I'm not attempting to provide all of the explanations tonight. I'm offering a set of observations. I'm not going to read too much into them. I'm not going to read more than we're able to. But at the very least, the public is entitled to a thorough, adequate an investigative explanation for what it is that is being documented here. And there may be some difficulties in doing that. Let's go ahead, if we can now, to the actual photographs that we're speaking of tonight. These photographs were enhanced in terms of what's called a gamma correction. Unfortunately, our sky is not this blue anymore, not even close to it. And when I took these photographs, these details were not visible at the level that they are in the photographs. They had to be basically extracted through filtering techniques to enhance that.
Okay.
And there's two main filtering processes that have been applied to these photographs. One is what they will call a gamma reduction, and that's why your sky is looking more blue than it actually is anymore. At one time, it actually used to look like that.
Yeah, I remember.
And the other is a sharpening filter that will enhance the edges so that we can see what's going on more. Now, you can still hear me okay. Is that right, Jeff?
You're fine.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much. So now at the top of this article, there are two photographs that are shown to give a quick summary as to what the main observation here is. And that is that within the aircraft emission, whatever you want to think that's made of, whatever that aircraft emission is, you have the appearance of asymmetric appearance, meaning off-sided, one side in this case,
right.
Of two parallel sets of tracks. Now, I'm calling them core tracks. The names we'll all work on as time evolves. But there are several observations that we can start to make already. The first is that we have asymmetry of some kind. These tracks are happening from one side of the aircraft, not both sides. So on one side of this photograph, to back up, this photograph you're seeing at the top there,
number one,
it was taken literally, call it a 1 to 2, 3 seconds after this aircraft passed.
Okay.
This is immediately focusing on the emission right after the aircraft.
Now, is that one of the two emission trails, or is that both combined already?
This is everything. This is everything coming.
Okay.
Coming out of this is everything coming out of that plane.
Gotcha.
And so what you see is you see an asymmetry right away that already is begging of a question, and that is on one side. So when that emission comes out of the plane, you will see a merger that takes place between the two separate emissions from each side of the wing.
Correct.
You'll see those merge generally, and that's what's happened here. The merger has taken place, but then on one side you see a set of parallel tracks.
That's the bottom half of the picture. You'll see the parallel lines right through the white vapor.
So the obvious questions come up right away is, what are these? Why are they asymmetrical? And what are they? And then if you look closer at them, you'll see that they're composed independently of two tracks themselves. Okay. So if you actually look at this photo in detail, I actually now see six different formations within this one emission.
I see exactly what you're saying. The two lines moving horizontally through the bottom half of that mass actually appear to be four if you look at them.
That's correct, and the other two will be made up by the fact that the lower half, what appears to be the lower half of that emission, will be distinct in character from the other side.
Amazing.
The right side from the left
and
side of the aircraft.
This is not being done by a high-altitude wind that is quickly raking this out, either.
No, this is right after the aircraft.
I understand.
That's as close as you can get.
What an amazing photograph. Stand by. What are those? We'll think, and we'll talk to Clifford more about that in just a minute. Looking at the first picture from the extremely important article, Aerosol Asymmetry, Core Tracks and Pulse Observations by Clifford E. Carnicom. Santa Fe, New Mexico, and it's up at rents.com, number 2 in headlines. We're looking at the first picture, and I hope all of you are paying attention. That is within moments, literally, of the passing of the aircraft, taken with a very good camera, and we see clearly two horizontal tracks through the mass of vapor. It's not just vapor, though. There's much more going on there. These are aerosols. And what are these things? I've seen these in other photographs occasionally in the past. Clifford, you have too. To see this up close and in such excellent resolution is particularly galling. Let's go forward with our conversation.
You're right. Yeah, that is the main advantage that I can offer here, as we finally have some very good images of some unique features that I think we've all seen glimpses of in various ways as we've gone along.
I remember many years ago, my friend, when you were literally creating your own instrumentation, your own protocols, your own screening procedures, and making do with a shoestring.
Yeah, there's quite a bit that has gone on there. That's right. You know, at one time I did have a camera that was similar to this magnitude, but after photographs. And it's not fair to draw a connection here, but, you know, the fact is that camera was stolen shortly after I made some what I would call similar incriminating photographs of full-wing emissions.
I had a computer stolen under not dissimilar parallel circumstances, so, yeah.
Yeah, hard to say on that, but I have not had access to this imagery quality in a while now. And I would also remind and encourage people to keep track of those control photographs below. Keep that as a reference. To what we're speaking of. And if you go back below, you'll see that what do you have there? You have two very symmetric developments, very uniform, behaving in a very uniform fashion, dissipation even over time, as one would expect it to be. If you're flying an aircraft, you would like things to be even and symmetrical on both sides on your wing.
One would hope, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, already to me, you have a series of questions that should be asked, regardless of where those answers are going to lead to. You have a series of questions that need to be asked and answered. And the identification of actually six different formations within this emission. And you have two sets of two tracks of some type. And then even closer, because this will come up, this will be discussed more as we go along, but you actually already see the signs of something else that's important that takes place further, and that is you see a differentiation between what one would call the right side of the aircraft, or in this case, the lower part of the photograph, and the upper part. You see much more dense materials, and you will start to see a striation that's taking place.
So the aircraft was moving from right to left as we look at this picture.
This aircraft actually should have been moving from left to right.
The two tracks would have come out of
the right side of the aircraft. They would come out of the right side of the aircraft, period.
Okay.
And the left side, the left side would correspond to the upper part of the photograph.
Very good.
All right. And the first two photographs are just sort of a snapshot view to say, hey, folks, it looks like we have an issue here to look at, and then we're going to go through a progression in more detail. But now if we go to the second photograph, and this also was taken a matter of seconds. And that is one thing that's going to be necessary here, and that's one thing that's different. The shutter speed has to be fast on their camera. You have to be able to get a frame roughly every second or so to be able to keep up with what's going on here. And that's been one of the problems. These cameras that are taking, you know, up to 10 seconds to recharge to get an image, this is over with by that time. So we do need a certain caliber of equipment in order to capture this well. You may be able to capture it, but to capture it well. On this second photograph, now, what do we see here? It's these tracks or core tracks, whatever you want to call them, that are really very interesting here. Because what you see is that these materials are holding their form and their shape. In other words, if one is going to claim that this is water vapor of some kind, it needs to mix. It needs to follow some kind of fluid motion dynamics, and not that of some continuous stream or ribbon of material. It would mix with the surrounding materials in a uniform fashion.
It would dissipate almost instantly.
Yeah. If the material was uniform, it would dissipate uniformly. Again, we go back to the control photographs. What do they show? They show what we expect, uniform distribution of uniform material. We don't have that here. What you have are two ribbons of material, your set of four tracks, two and two, that are holding their shape even though they're displaced. You see that the ribbon has basically moved like a snake movement, right, where it's undulating.
Yep. Yep.
It's an undulating motion within this ribbon, but it holds its form. Now, what that says to me from a logical standpoint is that this material is discrete. It is discrete. It is a unique composite of some type that is holding its form that is not in accord with the surrounding medium. That is an important observation and an important statement, because that doesn't fit with the claims of normalcy that have been passed on to us by how many supposed authorities and officials that refuse to investigate this. You have a very difficult time explaining this in terms of normalcy, because I do not believe, maybe I'm wrong, but I do not believe most people would regard this as an expected and normal result of an aircraft ignition.
That's all fascinating. Right. Now, the two sets of white cores have a what appears to be a darker spine down the center, if I'm describing it accurately.
Right, and at this point, I wouldn't know if that's simply a space. You know,
space between there, right.
Yeah, it could be an airspace of some type.
Right.
I wouldn't know that it's necessarily any kind of materialness, say, at all.
Okay, very good.
But the fact that it holds its form, even though it has been displaced, indicates the physical model or ideal of some type of ribbon. Now, again, I do not want to read too much into things, but we do have to at least research and investigate potential connections that may exist with previous research. And we do know that a filament material has been a significant finding. An airborne filament material has been a significant finding in the body of research that has accumulated over time. And these are long, photographs. You'll see that I saw one sample of stuff is 30 feet long on the highway, okay, a continuous stream, a quarter inch thick. Again, I'm not drawing any connection. I'm simply saying one should investigate the physical identification of this ribbon structure. And at least guess whether there's any relation to the filament materials that have been disclosed so many times in the past.
And we'll come back and define the filament aspect of aerosol spraying in just a couple minutes. My guest, Clifford Carnicom, and we are looking at those spray trails in the skies up close and learning new things all the time. We'll be right back. Clifford Carnicom. Clifford, a question, an observation. Global warming, of course, a great concern of many on the planet. There are strictly designated core groups. There are those who believe that human beings are causing it all, and there are those who believe that human beings are only a marginal component in global warming. But be that as it may, we have lost our formerly blue and once reasonably clean skies, our atmosphere. Many of these folks, and God bless them all, say that the blame for that can be laid directly at the feet of petroleum-burning automobiles and trucks and other ground-based polluting combustible industries, as it were, coal-fired plants and so forth. But the bottom line is, those modes of pollution and creation of carbon dioxide have little or nothing to do with the upper altitude pollution that is now rampant and, in fact, dominant on this planet. I'm talking 20 to 30,000 feet and higher at times. The ground-based polluting industries meaning petroleum-based for the most part, just don't projectile vomit, as it were, their refuse up to 30,000 feet. It's a whole different thing. We are ruining the atmosphere. We are making it much worse. But talk to us a little bit about automobiles and bus pollution vis-a-vis aerosol pollution and poisoning of our atmosphere.
Well, Jeff, actually, I actually plan and hope to talk to you quite a bit tonight about the global warming issue. I don't know if you got an email I sent to you. It was at the last moment.
Yes, I did.
But, yeah, this is a real significant topic. And if we can, it's up to you. But to do that subject justice, I'm hoping we might be able to do that in detail in the second hour.
Let's do that.
That's possible.
Of course it is.
And I could, if we only have a few minutes in this hour, that I could follow through with these photographs.
Sure, we have about 10 minutes. Yes, absolutely. We have about 10 minutes left in this hour. Go right ahead.
Because, you know, you're reading my mind well, and that's a major topic that I want to talk tonight. I just think that maybe we can go in a little bit more depth on that on the next round, and we can finish up with these photographs in the sense that we've presented two, let's say, examples of something that appears to be quite unusual, and focus on those. I would simply like to let people know that on the same page, there is now a progression of photographs. And there are, I think, 9 total that show the process that we're talking about in great detail over a time span of roughly 20 to 30 minutes. Now, remember the control photographs, okay, that's all over with. We're in about 15 to 20 seconds, okay? In this case, of these photographs that follow below, you'll see it say, skip the one right now on the pulse character. That's another topic. But skip to the set where you see 9 in a row stacked one after another.
Right.
By the third photograph on that, the control series is all done with. It's gone. You can't see a thing. But, you know, what's happening in our case? By the third photograph, things are just really getting started is what's happening here. And if you follow through these photographs in general, I'll outline them in brief. And the first is, you know, you have a broader view of these core tracks and the overall structure of the original emission. Again, you see some very distinct features, striation developing already in the lower half as opposed to what's happening on the upper or left side of the aircraft, and you have your parallel formations within it. You know, the bottom line here is that the public is entitled to know what this is. That's the bottom line here. People are entitled to know what is coming out of these aircraft.
We thought the EPA was obligated to tell us what kind of poison was being sent in by you for analysis, too, but we didn't get too far.
You know, I ask the public, just take this from the pollution issue alone. You know, forget all the deep ramifications that have evolved over 7 years of research and all the interviews you've had. Just look at this from the standpoint of pollution alone and ask yourself, what do you want to do about it? What is coming out of the aircraft? Are you convinced that that's just water vapor and that everything is fine? And in one case, you have a very set of clear photographs that demonstrate a transformational phenomenon taking place over an interval of 20 to 30 minutes that radically alters the atmosphere, visibility, conditions, quality of the air. And then you have another set of photographs on the same environment generally.
The control. Yeah.
It's all over in 15 seconds.
Yep.
And has been, as it follows the laws of physics for, you know, since basically before we were here.
Right.
Does that make sense to you? Take it on the issue of pollution alone if you have difficulty digging into the deeper ramifications. And it's not okay with me that you have an unidentified substance, a peculiar form, being delivered into the air that we breathe. It's not okay with me, and I'm hoping that it's not okay with the public at large. And this is why this is being offered as another line of evidence. If you now follow those photographs through, the second one, you'll see the displacement of those core tracks, but still holding their shape indicates the introduction of a discrete material,
right.
What it indicates,
yeah.
Something different from the surrounding material. By the third photograph, the core tracks are just about gone, not quite, but they're largely gone, and you're seeing a coalescing of the striations of material. This is somewhat where the term pulse came from as we go further down the page. By the fourth photograph, the core tracks are all gone. That's roughly 30 seconds 30 seconds to 45 seconds, I would say, into the series, those core lines are completely gone. And now you have a further transformation that takes place. And the general story here is you have two or three things going on. Number one, you start to see this, what you could call a pulse-like material or pendules, but coalescing of materials in discrete shapes at periodic intervals, very even intervals. But again, only on one side of the trail. And on which side are they? The side that the core tracks are on.
Precisely.
You have these very substantial developments, sort of bulbous affairs, that develop in a very systematic, periodic fashion. And they happen to be, whether or not it's by coincidence or whether or not it's by direct physical results, certainly the latter is what's indicated, they are occurring on the same side that the most unusual core tracks or parallel sets of tracks have been finally identified visually very, very strongly. So you have a very unusual formation taking place. Many of us have seen this, and I'm aware of that. The difference now is that we're seeing that in really close detail, how that is taking place. And these photographs quite convincingly dismiss the arguments that have been, attempted to be made on meteorological effects and supposed the Virga claim taking place, that this is just moisture streaming down. It's not fitting with these photographs at all. You have a direct correlation association between the presence of these unusual ribbon-like structures and the subsequent periodic bulbous or pendule development on the side. And then as you go through these photographs at the end, you'll see a great asymmetry, a dissymmetry between both sides, one side developing very thick, coalescing in really deep striations, and the other side sort of wisping out to a definite boundary, none of this material ever mixing or dissipating as in the control photograph, but actually expanding and furthering a set of reactions. It appears as though there's a deepening set of reactions as opposed to the diminishing of reactions as would be expected with any kind of moisture content. And so the final culmination is really quite dramatic in terms of its manifestation, development, time required, periodic nature to it, asymmetry, and that is the offering of tonight, is to show this in detail and to beckon the public to repeat this process and to gather and collect this evidence and information and make your claim as to whether or not you believe there is a form of pollution taking place in our atmosphere.
Look at that. Look at the last two pictures. Look carefully and then look at the first one. And look at the bottom, as it were, that one side of the airplane put out. Look at the top. And then ask yourself, is that a normal aviation contrail?
Yeah,
and if you think it is, you better go back to watching television and just forget about it.
It's really quite dramatic. And, you know, the logical conclusion here is that you have the systematic distribution of a material, some physical material of some type, into the atmosphere in a deliberate fashion using aircraft as the medium, exactly the claim that has been made for more than close to 10 years now.
Those are an amazingly instructive set of photographs, Clifford. Just amazing. Wow.
Now, the conditions for these are somewhat ideal in the sense that to actually capture these photographs at this quality, what happens is, first of all, you have to get in there before the operation actually starts. You need the blue background as best you can before they come in and screw it all up so that you'll have the contrast. Those core tracks would have never shown up once that sky has been washed out.
Got it.
So you need a certain conditions basically before they screw it up to get in there. And you also need, I believe, relatively calm conditions in the upper atmosphere because sometimes, you know, these things just coalesce and just hang up there and take a half hour, as opposed to if you have high winds, it could disperse more quickly or more, would not hold the form exactly in the same way. So I encourage people simply to get the quality of equipment to be able to capture this imagery, see if it's replicated at the level that I have, and offer it as a direct line of evidence to those supposed authorities that have not responded to your reasonable request for investigation.
And, ladies and gentlemen, what you're seeing in the last couple of photographs, of course, does not go away. It joins others that have been laid down by other aircraft It'll spread out across the sky. You've watched them, many of you, of course, for years now. And you keep breathing this stuff, and you keep grumbling about it. But after a while, a lot of people just accept it. And they actually will tell me on occasion, it's always been like that. That's the game the controllers play. Desensitization to a grotesque debasement of our environment. We'll be back with more after the top of the hour break.